Welcome to No Taboo Mom podcast, where real stories inspire real change. My name is Eva Gillen, and today we're diving into a global health crisis that has been ignored for far too long. Endometriosis is affecting 1 in 10 women, and it takes average 7 to 10 years to diagnose. So to better understand the problem that so many women face, I invited my friend Shannon from Canada, who is unfortunately a victim of endometriosis. So let's start with you. Welcome, Shannon. Thank you so much for joining us today. How do you feel today? How are you?
I feel good. I feel physically, I feel great. Better than I have in my 20s, in my 30s. I am now, I'll be 49 in a couple of days. And, you know, I mean, I'm starting to get older, but I don't have that pain. And it's funny, I lived with it for so long that I just normalized it. And I thought I was always going to be in pain. But yeah, I had that hysterectomy when I was 43 and life just changed. It just got so much better. Imagine a life without pain.
How did you first realize that something was wrong? Like, when was it that you just felt your symptoms for the first time?
So it's kind of funny. Like, I had had pain for, like, I'd always had sort of painful periods, even when I was a kid, not super long. Like, it definitely was something that was a slow progression, and it got worse and worse over time. You know, even as a kid, I had painful periods, and they, you know, I went on birth control when I was 14 to help manage that pain. And like I said before, I had normalized it. And part of it was because that's just what you do when you live with pain for so long, and it sort of slowly creeps up on you. You don't really realize how bad it's gotten. But when I really started to pursue, like really pursue a hysterectomy, I was probably in my mid to late 30s, and a family member had taken me aside and said, you don't look good. Are you feeling okay? And, you know, I'd probably been not looking good and not feeling okay for a long time, but she finally said something. And that's when we had a talk about it, like a real honest talk. And I had never really spoken to anyone other than doctors about how I was feeling because I was so ashamed of it all. Anyway, so after that conversation, she really encouraged me to find a doctor that is going to listen to me, you know, and we talked about how bad it gets. And she said, the next time the pain gets that bad, you need to go to emergency. And I just never would go because I never thought it was that big of a deal, right? Like I had gone to so many doctors and they had told me so many times that it was just all in my head, that I believed them and I doubted myself. And that's probably one of the worst parts of this whole thing is that I didn't trust myself anymore because the doctors said, you know, it's all in your head. So after a while, you start to believe that. So anyway, it was that conversation with that family member that made me kind of, I guess it validated it for me in a way. And then I really started actively like pursuing getting some help. You know, that was the turning point for me, but I had been dealing with pain for decades.
What challenges did you face in getting diagnosed in general, just the diagnosis, and how long did it take just to get to a diagnosis? This is it. This is endometriosis. That's what you get.
It's funny. I never got an endometriosis confirmation until after my hysterectomy. Yeah, I was told by the doctor who finally did my hysterectomy. He said, you know, we can't diagnose these things until after the surgery, and we can take a look at the uterus and the lining, and then we'll know for sure what it was. But you know, we don't really know why you're in that much pain. There was different things, kind of ideas or notions that they thought, you know, it might be PMDD or it just might be painful periods or who knows what, but it was never really looked into. And yeah, and they told me they wouldn't know until after the surgery. And was that a risk that I was willing to take? And yeah, it was, you know, like I said, it had been decades that I was in pain for. I faced every challenge imaginable. I was made to feel like it was my fault, that I was wasting doctors' time by being, you know, dramatic. I was told that it was all in my head, that other women don't complain about this. So why am I, you know, like I felt a lot of shame about this. Like when you're told that time and time again from, you know, by different doctors for years, you eventually just stop speaking up. But then I had that conversation with that family.
That this is the
when you start to doubt yourself, right? Yeah. And, And then I had that conversation with that family member, and that's when I said, okay, you know what, I'm going to do something about this because it's really affecting me. So finally, when I was 43 years old, I found a doctor in Calgary who listened. I also think that at that point, I had aged out of the window where they saw me as a potential mother. As long as they thought I might want kids, they refused to consider a hysterectomy. Despite my repeated insistence that I didn't want children, I had to wait until I was considered too old before they took action. So, you know, I endured that chronic pain for years.
I think I see this approach from doctors so many times and in so many different ways. And I think you and I, we talked about it last time we met in Berlin, that it was the same with me after my maternal birth injury, where they were just literally me going to doctors with my complaints. They were just kind of saying, you're fine to have sex, or are you planning to have more children? Because if you do, then, you know, I wouldn't do the surgery. They didn't really care about that my, you know, muscles and bladder and everything is falling out of the vagina, or nobody really cared about the quality of life I'm having or the quality of sexual relationship I'm having with my husband. The only question that was asked is, are you planning to have another child? Are you going to produce humans? And yeah, for the first time, I felt like the worst in my life, because I'm like, fuck, like, what is this? I can't believe that you're asking me this question. I don't want to talk about what my body is still capable of producing. I want you to focus on what I'm saying about my symptoms, how I feel about them, and how can we help me, not future me, not my husband, not my child. What about me? And it sounds like, once again, this problem, and it's a global scale on every, it's very upsetting.
Yeah, it's systemic.
And also one more thing that I want to say, because you said only after the surgery they were able to give you a full diagnosis. Is this something that happens a lot?
I don't know. I know that when we spoke a few years ago in Berlin, we talked about this at length, and you had said that, you know, the doctors told me, or that doctor told me, that they wouldn't know until after the surgery what it really was. And you said that's not true. I only know what the doctor told me. And at that point, I didn't care if it was diagnosed before or after. I just wanted to do something to fix me in the moment, right? Like, I couldn't take the pain. I couldn't function. I couldn't live my life. And so, yeah, okay, fine. Diagnose it after. I don't really care. I was willing to do anything to feel better and live my life. So
how did endometriosis affect your daily life and work? Like, what were the, you know, symptoms, and how did you feel, like, on a, not only periods, but just the whole time?
Yeah. Like, you know, like I said, I mean, I'd always had kind of bad, heavy, long periods, and it really was progressive, and they got worse over time, which is challenging because, you know, it sneaks up on you in a way. But it, at its worst, you know, in my early 40s, it was debilitating. Many days I couldn't get out of bed to work. At that time, remote work was not very common, and I had to go into the office 5 days a week. And so I literally physically couldn't do it. So I burned through sick time in a matter of months. I had to use vacation days to cover absences. And then, you know, at work, I think my credibility suffered a little bit too. I was always sick, but I wasn't comfortable explaining my condition to my male boss, nor should I have to. It strained personal relationships. You know, people didn't really understand. Men and women couldn't relate. The shame was overwhelming because doctors, you know, repeatedly told me it was all in my head. So I tried to hide it. I took painkillers that didn't help. I spent half my life in bed. You know, my periods lasted 2-3 weeks at this point, you know, with only one pain-free week a month before the cycle starts again. It just sucks. You know, even my husband at the time, we're not together anymore, he didn't really understand or fully believe me. He tried to be supportive, but, you know, it took a toll on my relationships with friends and family. So, yeah.
Of course. Is there any treatment today? Like, is there anything that can help?
I think there are some things that can help. It depends on the person. Like, for me, birth control was not good. Like, even at the age of, like I said, I think I was 14 when they put me on it. And I was at 34, finally, I was fed up and I had enough. And I made the decision to go off of it. but it just never agreed with me. I tried every type of birth control. Nothing worked for the pain. Oftentimes it made things worse. Birth control always made me feel mentally unwell, you know, like I was out of control.
Yeah.
I wasn't myself, you know, it completely disrupted my hormones. And so for 20 years I was on it. At 34, I'd had enough and I stopped. I was willing to risk pregnancy just to stop taking it. What I didn't know at the time was that I was never going to get pregnant because I had endometriosis. So yeah, I spent 20 years on a medication that made me physically and mentally sick. And it wasn't until 9 years after that that I finally got a doctor to listen to me and give me the treatment that I needed. As far as other things that I'm aware of now, I think ablation can help. That's one thing I never did. And they say that there are different types of birth control that can help. But for me, nothing worked.
Do the doctors really say sometimes, because that's what I heard a lot when I was researching the condition and this illness, that some doctors say literally recommend women to get pregnant to heal endometriosis? Like, have you ever heard something like that from anyone?
I've never heard that, but I was always very clear that I didn't want children.
Okay.
So they never floated that idea to me.
Okay, good.
Because they knew that I wasn't interested in that. Yeah. So I don't know if other women have been told that. It seems like a rather extreme solution. I literally had one doctor, and it was a female doctor, said to me, I flat out said, like, listen, can I get a hysterectomy? I think I was early 40s at this time. I said, I've been dealing with this for so long. Nothing works. Isn't there anything you can do? Like, can I get a hysterectomy? She said, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do for you. And that was flat out a lie. It just was. So,
So we already know that the healthcare system in Canada sucks like everywhere else in the world, as from what you're saying.
It's not great.
I mean, I'm saying this with, I already have the experience right now with the Polish, German, and Spanish healthcare system, also Canadian, and I must say Australian as well. And I don't see where it's going anywhere. It still seems to me, once again, women's pain, health condition, everything that we feel and we say and report is just being ignored and ignored over and over and over again. But is there anything specifically in the Canadian healthcare system that you would say, I wish this changed? Is there any improvements right away, especially for women affected from endo, that you could say, I wish this happened in Canada because that would help women with their fights with endometriosis? What would it be?
Yeah. So I do think that it's a systemic problem. It's not just in one country or another. It's in all countries. The healthcare system, you know, needs to listen to women and take their concerns seriously. There is a bias that I think should be acknowledged and dismantled. And I think real change, as with anything, it starts with awareness and education and shifting mindset. And that takes time. I think it's getting better. It's been 7 years since I had my 6 years, maybe since I had my hysterectomy. And I always read articles that I've come across about endo and women's healthcare. And, you know, I'm follow that because I'm passionate about that kind of thing. And I do see a shift, but it doesn't come on its own. It takes these conversations and it takes speaking up and being brave and telling your story and listening to women. And it's going to take time, but it's also going to take work.
That's true. I've noticed also there are so many, we were just, because it's March is awareness month for endometriosis. That's why we're actually here also speaking. And Yula and I were just researching all those accounts, and it turns out there's so many women out there. And at first it was just like a bit of like, oh my God, like, you know, we've got so many people to connect. And then I realized I'm actually happy about huge amount of women suffering from it. And then that just kind of like, it hit me like a trim. It's like, oh my God, look at all these women following the accounts. They're just like, you know, thousands of followers in Germany, in Canada, in Australia, and all those countries. And then I was like, I can't believe there are so many advocates out there, and it's still such a big problem. So that means there is, I mean, one in 10 women. If you look at your friends, one in 10 of your friends, female friends, is suffering from it. It's insane.
I think it's more than that. Yeah, I think it's more than that. And especially as you get a little older, I mean, it gets worse with age. It just does. But I wouldn't be surprised if those numbers are you know, as we know, women don't report things. We just live with them. We just suck them up. So I think the numbers are much higher than that. I personally have a lot of friends who are going through this right now or have been through it. And it's just, it sucks. And, you know, when you're down and out, the last thing you want to have to do is gear up for a fight just to have somebody listen to you. But that is kind of what you have to prepare yourself to do.
I know Australia is working on new solutions right now, new tests and so on. They're going to be similar to the tests you're taking for coronavirus. So there are going to be solutions very soon. Poland is also working on it. But I mean, still, I can't believe it takes such a long time. And then it is scary because I agree with you that I think there are more women than we think. I think those are the extreme cases that women see stars because of that pain, literally. And then they go and they have to find out because they cannot function. But there's also, I think, a huge percentage of women that have maybe a little bit milder pains, if you know what I'm saying, and or they don't complain, as you know, the standard one. And I think they just keep it quiet because it's stigmatized, because it's ignored, because it's ridiculously kind of like let go and nobody cares about it. And it really, really makes me angry.
Yeah, it makes me angry too, especially after, 20 years of just trying to get someone to take me seriously. But I do think that there's something about my generation of women, and certainly my parents' generation of women, that we were told to, we have to suffer in silence, right? Don't complain, make yourself small, don't speak up, all of those things. And so I think, and that again, too, is to change that kind of thinking will take time. I really do think that there are a lot of women out there suffering from this, and they just think that, you know, they've been told so many times that it's just in their head that they believe it, because I did for a long time. And, you know, you kind of start to blame yourself after a while. Yeah. And that's a horrible way to live. Yeah, I think it's really prevalent. And I'm glad to hear that there are changes being made. But for God's sakes, it's 2025. Like this shouldn't be an issue.
Is there any like additional advice you would give women who are right now listening and thinking, I'm suffering from it? Like, what do I do? Is there anything additional that you can tell them that could help them?
Yeah, I think, you know, it does help to have, like, I keep thinking back to that family member that said to me, you know, she pulled me aside and she said, is everything okay? You don't look good. Surrounding yourself with people that care about you, good people that'll tell you the truth is number one. But you really do have to be your own advocate. Nobody knows your body better than you, not even a doctor. If a doctor dismisses your pain or tells you that it's all in your head, move on. Find another doctor who will listen. You know, never give up. Many women share the struggle, and the common thread is that we have all had to fight to be heard or to be taken seriously or just fight for fair treatment. Not to get political, but if recent events in the US are any indication, women's healthcare is still under threat. So my advice is be prepared to stand your ground. If a doctor isn't listening, don't waste your energy. Find somebody who will, because they are out there. Stay strong and don't give up.
I think it's already a very powerful thing to say to women. I think this is exactly what we need, to be honest, because listening to our bodies, it's probably something that was taken away from us, I think, in the whole process. And I remember that conversation you and I we had in Berlin. It was exactly it, that the way we were all raised is just to kind of ignore most of those symptoms. And exactly. And then.
That's right. And smile. And it was only until after my hysterectomy, and it took some time afterwards, you know, I didn't feel great immediately. I would say it took 6 months to a year to really kind of, for my body to normalize, for my hormones to normalize. And then it was after that, that I could, once the pain was gone, then I could listen to my body. And I knew, you know, it was almost like everything that I was born with came back to me. Like I started to believe in myself. I could see clearly then that I was in a lot of pain, and I couldn't believe I lived my life like that for so long. It was so unnecessary, and it does change your choices and your decisions and your relationships. It changes everything. It will change your life. But it was only after I had the hysterectomy and I had some time in my new healthy body that I was able to kind of reflect and see it for what it was. So when you're in it, it's really hard. You need to have good people around you, but you need to stand up for yourself and don't take no for an answer. Find another doctor. There are lots of them out there.
I love it. Thank you so much for that. This is very wonderful. And thank you for being brave as well and speak up about it. I really appreciate it. And thanks for joining the brave women of Na Tavu Mam.
Oh, wait, before you go, here is our disclaimer. Listen up, it's important. The Na Tavu Mam podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. The views and opinions shared are personal experiences and should not be considered professional medical, psychological, or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified professional for any concerns related to your health, well-being, or personal circumstances. The hosts and guests of this podcast are sharing their own insights and do not take responsibility for individual decisions made based on this content. All right, that's it. See you next time.